Welcome back to the National Defense. I'm Nate Herron. We are joined today by a Renaissance woman, a Renaissance runner, as she's been called in the New York Times, Alexi Pappas. She is a former Olympian and an author, actress. Alexi, welcome to the show. I actually saw your movie Olympic Dreams during the COVID lockdown with Nick Kroll, and I loved it. That was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. And that's so kind of you to say.
Well, you know, and that was a weird time for people. 2020, as a guy who I personally do a lot of live events and sporting events and that sort of thing. And when COVID came and shut everything down, it was an interesting kind of narrative that was going on in people's minds. And that movie kind of just tapped into that zeitgeist, a little bit of kind of both inclusion and isolation. And you filmed it all in an Olympic village, right? Was that in Pyongyang?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it was the first fictional movie shot in an Olympic village, which was so incredible because all the actors besides Nick Kroll were Olympians. And that was like, you know, just this otherworldly experience.
What took longer, filming the movie or getting the IOC to approve you going into the Olympic Village to record it?
I love that. Well, you know, we only had so much time to film because we were only there during the games. We shot for about 3 weeks. But the way the movie came about was that the president of the IOC saw my previous movie, Tracktown, on an airline of all places, which I think is where a lot of people watch movies. And he invited me to be a part of this artist in residency program that the Olympics has. And I think that it's really cool that the Olympics is, you know, encouraging athletes and artists to, you know, for athletes to be artists. And so they invited me to be inside the village and to make a project. And I am someone who, when you give me a pile of twigs, I'm going to make like the biggest treehouse I can. So I was like, well, I'm going to make a whole movie in here if they're going to let me in, you know? And so we did. And it was really, really cool, really cold, right? Like our gear would shut down occasionally because it was so cold there, but just magical to film a fictional movie with real athletes and a real comedian, Nick Kroll.
Well, you've certainly got a lot on your plate, obviously a Renaissance woman. Alexi won an NCAA All-American athlete at both Dartmouth and for the Ducks at Oregon. She represented Greece at the 2016 Summer Olympics, so you were down in Rio, and set a national record for the 10K. I wouldn't run a 10K if the authorities were chasing me, but you're a runner, and you've come out with a book. It's actually a second book. We've got Bravey, which has been adapted as a young adult book. It comes out here August 22nd. And it's got a foreword by Maya Hawke, the daughter of Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, who I think Maya and her mom are in a movie that's coming out really soon. But she wrote a really nice foreword to your book, and I was able to go through this. I have a fourth grade son and a second grade son, and I work for a professional women's soccer team, and it's important to me to show my boys strong women that are, you know, able to, you know, overcome odds and adversity. But you reached the top of your running career, basically, at the Olympics, and then you had the other side of the coin. Can you talk us through what that kind of rise and fall was like for you?
Yeah, well, I think that there is a adrenal fatigue and like a dip associated with any peak in our life, right? Like we work towards something and it's natural, but unexpected to feel that there is another half to a mountain. Like if we think about a peak in our life as like the emoji of a mountain, right? It's this, you know, it has an ascent and then there's a descent, but we really only prepare for the ascent. And, you know, in rock climbing, it's just as dangerous to come down the mountain as to go up. It's more dangerous actually. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was just really unprepared for that. My own mom had manic bipolar and took her own life when I was young. And so I was just really uncertain about how to see mental health. And something that you and I chatted about for briefly before we hopped on was I did a discussion with the Army Resilience Directorate, and what I tried to share, which is what I tried to share in the book and which is what saved my life when I had this post-Olympic depression, was the idea that my mental health struggle was an injury. And that was really what turned it around for me was, you know, I had this, it's called like a situational depression. It's when like everything feels okay. Mm-hmm. And then you feel like you kind of fell off a cliff. And to see it as an injury really was life-changing for me, because we know how to take care of our bodies much better than we know how to take care of our minds. And all of a sudden, when I saw it that way, I was like, oh, all right, like this isn't going to heal overnight, but it can heal. I need help. And not every help is going to be useful to me, just like not every physio is going to work for every person. Mm-hmm. And my feelings are going to feel not great for a long time. And that doesn't mean I'm not healing. Like if you look at a broken leg, the broken leg hurts for a long time, and that doesn't mean we're not healing. So there were just so many parallels, and that was really what turned it around for me. But I think also just having the expectation that there is a natural dip after these big peaks, and we can see them as something different than a threat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, we're talking with Alexi Pappas and here on the National Defense. And so you spoke to the Army, and this is a radio show. We primarily focus our programming direction towards active duty military veterans and their families. And we know when one member of the family wears a uniform, the entire family serves. Was there anything from your background as an athlete or an artist that you applied with the Army? You went, you spoke at the Pentagon. Was there anything particular that stuck out with you? I know you said you've kind of maintained contact with them through the time.
For sure. I mean, look, we are, I think we're creatures where sometimes the way the world sees us and the way we see ourselves don't match. And that is really, really, really interesting to experience. You know, like when I got back from the Olympics, it was like, you should, you know, I ran a national record. It was wonderful, but I didn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. And so that I think, is something we might have in common, but also just the opportunity to see seemingly objective circumstances, challenges, goals, all these things in a different way is the opportunity that we have as athletes, as people serving, as the family, everything. We have an opportunity to see things differently, and we have to, right? There's always a side doorway in to our situation. There's always a way to see yourself as something different in your own favor. And so like when I spoke at the Pentagon, I just tried to really, you know, I discuss things like PTSD, like mental health challenges, all these things as injuries, because that was really like what I needed to save my own life. And that may not be a useful metaphor for everybody, but it was useful for some people. Mm-hmm. And it also extends to the families, right? Like when I was having a tough time, my dad needed to make sure I got help. He was not the one to actually help me, but he was helping. He knew what his role was.
Yeah.
And he knew like when to speak up and when not to. And he knew that he didn't understand how I felt, but he knew that I needed to not be alone. Mm-hmm. So I just think, you know, the greatest thing that I wanted to like connect with people at that talk and just with the book in general is the feeling of being helpable. You just want to feel helpable. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, because when you don't feel that, when you feel the opposite, you feel isolated, you feel alone. And it's a really difficult feeling. And so I'm just trying to give little switches of the mind and terms of seeing things in a way that made me feel helpable, with hopes that it helps others feel helpable.
Well, you clearly have with this. You look at the comments that are coming out from people. I read the quote from Mindy Kaling, and you know, you compare it to the highest of high and the lowest of lows. The story when we were kids growing up was, hey, the astronauts, they get to walk on the moon. And then there was pretty much proof that almost to a man at that point, they suffered a pretty great depression after they had, you know, gone through all the training and not, I mean, most of it physical, trying to, you know, handle the stresses of rocket flight and getting to the moon. And then once you've done that, there's that letdown. But you're such a good writer, and this adaptation for young adults, I think, is hitting a lot of marks that people need to hear. The way that you write about your dad is helpful to me as a father, because, you know, you don't pull any punches. You don't say, hey, my dad was perfect. He did everything right. But it comes through, the humanity of him comes through not the helplessness, but kind of sort of the idea that, you know, I don't know, I don't have all the answers. So I'm going to help my kid find someone who does. And it's really impressive how you've written about your dad. I love the story of your, the section of the book about Girl Scouts and the Girl Scout camp and the raccoon in the sleeping bag. That's a good one that I think I've had a similar situation with, except it wasn't a raccoon or a sleeping bag. It was shoes and an elf. So, you know.
Oh my gosh. I have so much like warmth toward you right now. Cause it's just like, yeah, like it's just so unglamorous, like navigating but it's amusing. Mm-hmm. Like, I think what I hear in your voice is like genuinely, like things are challenging, right? Like whatever it is, whether it's like something we want to chase or something we can't control that happens, but there's like a way to look at things where we are a victim and we're bitter, or there's a way to kind of be like, wow, this is hard. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel it in your voice. And I hope that people can feel like invited to see themselves as like these curious, malleable creatures that are bumping around and getting all, you know, like almost like when you put a laundry together and they all turn each other's colors. It's like, yeah, we're like going to change and then be challenged. But that is like, that is life, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so
the book is Bravey, yeah. And Alexa, you've done a service, I would say, to not only the young women, but just the young people and parents here in America. The line that you said and wrote down, I'm amazed. Now, how old were you when you wrote this little poem of Run Like a Bravey?
Oh, I was in college.
Okay.
I feel like the poems are very like they're simple, but like they cut deep for me.
Right.
So yeah, I wrote that in college.
Well, they don't cut just deep for you. That run like a bravey, sleep like a baby, dream like a crazy, replace can't with maybe. Now, my dad would always say, can't never did anything. I like yours better. I like yours a lot better. Yours is a little more user friendly. Do you have a particular favorite chapter in the book?
Yeah. So there's, look, I have grown a lot since I wrote. So I love the adult book. I'm so, so proud of. Mm-hmm. With the, you know, book for younger readers, I really, really put in an effort to rework everything so that it felt like it wasn't just a cut down version of a book, but it's a whole new book. And I wrote a chapter called Glop, G-L-O-P, which I'm so excited about because it basically, it goes into a bit, it talks about why change is painful and that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And relates it to when caterpillars become butterflies, which I know sounds like, you know, a little, you know, it may sound butterfly-y, but the truth is that when a caterpillar becomes a butterfly, it goes into a chrysalis and it becomes pure liquid. And then it becomes a butterfly. It doesn't just sprout wings. And when I learned that, I realized that when we go through change, we can be reduced to our liquid glop state sometimes. And that is not a bad thing. That is like, that is a part of evolution. It's a part of nature. And the chapter, I'm excited about the chapter because I'm trying to like help young people understand that you have a choice to become a butterfly or not. And unlike caterpillars that cannot refuse their evolution, we can. And so I just wanted to give that to people in a way where they feel empowered if they ever feel like glop. Mm-hmm. To know that they're headed in the right direction.
Well, we've got glop, we've got being helpable, we've got the dealing with the fear of success and a lot of things. You've touched on so many different points in the book Bravey. The book Bravey will be available, the young adult version, August 22nd. Where can they find information on you and all your other projects, Alexi?
I have a website that's just my name, alexipappas.com. That's my same name on Instagram. And the book Bravey is available anywhere you buy books.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time. And we'd love to have you back on the show at some time and maybe talk a little bit more about all your other interests.
Yeah, I would love that. And I would love that so much. And I think I'm putting together more work with the people that you're reaching and working with, and I care a lot about it, so I'm really grateful to be here.
Well, thank you for your time. You've been listening to The National Defense.